Hi everyone, welcome back to Unscripted with Coco. I know it's been a minute since you guys last heard my voice, but I'm really excited to say that I'll be posting again now that I have some free time. So, for those watching the visual version, you're probably curious about this extra person next to me. We'll get to him in just a second, but first, let me give you like a quick overview of the episode today. So, in this new series that I'm kind of trying out, I want to try something a little different. So instead of just me sharing my thoughts and wisdom, we'll be diving into interviews with people whose perspectives I find fascinating, and we are going to explore their complex views on life and offering some insights into their unique, and I like to call it like three-dimensional experiences. Each episode will feature unique guests from students to entrepreneurs and everyday heroes. We'll dive deep into their personal stories, explore the philosophies that drive them, and uncover the experiences that have shaped their outlooks on the world. So, whether you're looking for inspiration, new ideas, or just some engaging conversations, this series aims to provide meaningful content that resonates on multiple levels. So, Danny, why don't you introduce yourself to the podcast?
Well, definitely did not prepare for our introduction. And I feel
Oh my
very
gosh.
commercialized after
It's
that
fine. It's
introduction.
fine. I think I rapped a little bit. That was a bit too fast, but yeah, you got this.
It was a really great intro. Maybe I'll get
Thanks.
a better one when in the future.
Yep.
Well, my name is Danny Huang. I'm a grade 11 student, rising, well, not rising anymore. That would be for summer. Junior year.
Rising. Right. Wait, if you're grade 11, don't you say rising senior or something?
Yes,
Or do
but
you
I
guys not
believe
call you that?
I
Call
think
yourself.
rising senior is usually for when you apply for a summer program and then they ask you
Well,
like rising something.
makes sense. Okay.
Well, in that case, I would be rising senior this summer. I have spent most of my life in China, which is I don't even realize or recognize that very often now, but that is just the case. That definitely shapes my perspective a lot in ways that I'm not even conscious about. And I do a bunch of stuff, but mainly my focus is on finance. I wish to go into equity research. And I play some instruments, but my relationship with music and especially instruments are interesting, namely that I stopped playing them. And I love sports. I know how to play a bunch of them. Is not I'm not particularly good at any single one, but I play golf the most, and I'll be going off to simulator after this.
Oh wait, that sounds really fun. Wait, remind me when you came to Canada again.
2021, I believe.
Oh yeah, we had this conversation. Whoa, but then your English is really good. Do you get that a lot? I bet you get that a lot.
Okay,
But
well.
it's
Here we go.
your Wait, so where were you in China? Like where are you from?
I was born in Hainan, which is the southernmost province.
Shut up. I spent every summer there since like I was a baby. Okay,
It's a
continue.
wonderful place for sure. It's expensive, but it's wonderful. And then family moved to Beijing. I don't have a lot of memories of that, but my dad used to work there, and still he works there now, I believe. And then we moved to Shanghai, which is a city I would say I know pretty well, and has the most impression on me. And I did elementary school until start of middle school, and then I transferred or moved to Canada, Toronto.
Did you go to an international school?
So I was, they would call it, in the program, which is I was in public schools, elementary schools, for a while until I believe maybe like grade 5, and then 6, 7, 8 I did bilingual schools, which is basically,
Oh, I think I know what you mean.
yeah.
Oh. Anyways. I think I also went to a public school, but I left right after grade five. Like I came to Canada right after grade five. But oh my God, I don't think I told you this, but I was writing my one of my supplementals lately, like a few days ago, and then they had a question about like what do you think, like what's your biggest growth or whatever, and then I just remembered, like, when I first moved to Canada, because I moved to Canada because I got into Abergle, like, in our classes, in grade six classes, I couldn't understand, like, math at all. Like, I couldn't understand what anyone's saying. Like, I felt like they were speaking, like not alien. That sounds really rude, but, like, it's just, they weren't speaking. Like, it was just, anyways, I just thought that was very interesting. But, okay. So, Danny, I know we chatted a bit the other day, but just to get a sense of like we chatted just to get a sense of what like we're gonna talk about, right? It's a very normal thing to do. So I kind of organized our meeting notes into five questions. So to start, I am so excited to know about the answer to your quest to your big like question. But just to give context to everyone listening or watching, Danny told me the other day that he has always wondered why. Like as students or adults work so hard, like what are we even working towards and what outcome are we trying to achieve? And Danny apparently figured out the answer to this question, and I've asked him to save it until the actual episode. So I think I've reworded the question a bit, but the first question is, oh my God, this isn't really a question. We see, okay. You mentioned the concept of working hard and asking the bigger questions. Like, why are you working so hard? Could you elaborate on this introspection and how you maintain a balance between hard work and personal enjoyment? So it's kind of a two-part question. So first part is tell me what you like realized. Second part is like, how do you think you're incorporating this big realization into your personal life and studying?
Yeah, well, I can't say wonderful question because I guess it's my own question. But I guess, and also my answer may not hit exactly the point. This would not be a
That's fine.
great
Don't worry.
interview answer. Yeah.
Yeah, don't worry.
Well,
That's fine.
so few answers about how do I balance hard work and enjoyment. I'll answer that quickly first because I think I, at least as much as I would like to think so, I don't think I do balance them very well. And there's a few interesting things there, I guess, and we can definitely talk about is there's a lot of people, and particularly successful people that I've had the privilege of talking to that have said, you need to balance it out. And there's a lot of people saying that we're having perspectives like that. But the way I've thought about it is it depends on where you want to go to, where you want to end up. And if for me, I want to end up in the top 1%, I don't know if it's a particularly egotistic or narcissistic thing to say, but I think if you want to be top, like top of whatever realm you're in, then you have to be off balance in some way. And for me, that off balance means sacrificing things like, sacrificing the means of not doing things that your peers are doing. And that's one of my big, I guess, philosophy is to not take the route or do the things that everyone else does, but instead take the route that nobody seems to take. Now, there's many ways to interpret that. It's definitely not complete because you could be doing, you could play, you can say, my friends are not playing video games all day, so I should play video. You can interpret it that way too, but that for me, I definitely want to interpret it more like work harder than other people. Not to me, I interpret it as brain rot, not brain rot, the same way as your friends or the people around you does, people around you do. That's the first question. My big answer, but I want to give it a proper context and intro because it feels a little odd to answer it this way, but
Okay, yeah.
the way I would introduce it, just I'm thinking about it, is what gives life meaning? I think that's the question that my answer is alluding to, or my answer answers. What gives life meaning? And that was the question that intrigued me, fascinated me, captured in my mind, and took up a lot of the thinking capabilities of my mind for quite a while, especially last summer. And I could not come up with a really good answer because for a long time, my answer was kind of like so that I can enjoy life eventually, so that I can, get to a place above the majority of the people, which could be viewed as a satanic view for sure. But what I found was that there are holes in that perspective. There are holes in that idea because it doesn't seem to, for one, it doesn't seem to drive you at certain points when you encounter tough situations or particularly tough situations. That why, that motivation doesn't seem to be able to push you hard enough through or push myself internally hard enough through. So I seek other stuff where I looked for other answers. Why are we doing this? And that obviously sparked a barrage of thoughts and questions, including also the interesting question that I don't have an answer to of is life a zero-sum game? Is how much work you put into something equal to how much happiness or how much spiritual and physical happiness that you can obtain? The answer seems to be no, because it seems like zero sum would be too perfect and it can't be like all that. You can defraud people, you can lie to achieve whatever, but I still don't have an answer there. That was one of the interesting questions that intrigued me, but I didn't get to this answer key, this interesting solution on my own. I have to, or well, I do have to credit Jordan Peterson. Now, disclaimer for your podcast that liking or accepting or taking in and thinking critically about one idea from one particular philosopher or person does not mean you endorse all of their ideas. And a lot of people I'm very interested in, you can say that about them, including Nietzsche. I'm very interested in some Nietzsche's ideas. When I listened to one of the professors or interesting speakers that I listened to that or that I really like, they say, when a student goes to them and say, "I like Nietzsche," they always ask which one or which one of his ideas, because his ideas are so wide-ranging and different. So one of Jordan Pe or what Jordan Peterson articulated about what gives life meaning really captured me. And his answer, which is, I guess, the answer or the thought that I really took, was that responsibility gives life meaning. And that's your answer. There you go. If you want for edit, they would put, I don't know, confetti on this. Oh, responsibility. But that's exactly what intrigued me or shook me when I first heard about this idea, is that it's not crazy. It's not like buzzer. It's not all that buzz. It's boring, or it seems mundane. It seemed to me like the last place you would look for meaning in life. But after, I listened to him articulate it, I thought about it to some depths myself, and it made sense to me, right? And there are observations in my life or in lives or around me that I saw or that I captured that seemed to support this hypothesis, this conclusion that responsibility gives life meaning. One example of counter argument, or I don't know the mathematical term for it, but proving by contradiction, I guess, is that people lose meaning when they lose responsibility or when they lack responsibility in their life. There are many interesting examples, especially in finance too, because you would think the reason why a lot of people, or say an investment banker, works his ass off is so that he can retire. But there are many stories, and there are certainly examples in, I guess, my proximity that shows that they actually cannot stop working. Or if they stop working, they go to Florida, go to their penthouse, spend a summer, they lose meaning. Like they question their life. What am I doing? And what they do, what most of them do, some come up with interesting solutions, but what tends to happen is they go back into the office because responsibility gives their life meaning. And without, well, I want to end off maybe the monologue and give you some space for questions and reflection. One interesting thing that this conclusion has sparked is also the discussion or the thinking about children, because children could be is often viewed as the biggest responsibility to parents. And that, certainly sparked some thinking in my mind about children responsibility and how it impacts the lives of parents. And also it led me to think about the role of having children, or not the role of having children, that was bad. But why, or is it that people lacked? Is it actually the evolutionary, or I think certainly evolution is a part of it, the evolutionary need to reproduce, but is there another facet of why having children is such a fundamental pillar of our lives, or our society, our culture? Is there another pillar that has to do with responsibility? Because what we often see, what we often hear about in culture, in social media, is people evading responsibilities. Students don't want to do homework. People who have an office job want to get out of there. But from this theory, and it seemed to make sense to me again, there may be holes. There may be holes that I did not detect. But from this theory, they lose meaning in their life. You run away from your job. You don't want to do their. You don't want to do your job. Where does your meaning come from? And so that's what led me to think about: is it that children becomes their biggest supplement of responsibility, and that becomes kind of like a loop of why children is such a big part of so many people or so many parents' lives, and they continue to be. That was one interesting thought that sparked from this. But yeah, there you go. That's the big spiel.
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I don't know why, but I saw like when we were talking the other day about this question, I literally thought like in the back of my mind I was like maybe responsibility, but then at the same time like I thought about a lot of different answers that could answer your question, but I think this is a great answer to your big question, and I think like oh my gosh, the point you talked about when you talked about like people who work in finance, that kind of made me think about like politicians. Like, don't you think a lot of politicians like crave responsibility and crave like the power that comes with the responsibility? And I don't know, like, what are your thoughts on that? Because I don't want to give any names, like specific names of politicians. Like, I don't want to get too political, but there are definitely a lot of politicians who like crave that idea of, I don't know, being on top of the world in a way. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, my take on politics is
Oh my gosh, let's not get too political. I'm like scared. I'm scared I'm gonna get demonetized.
might have to cut off all of this. Well, first thing, not pointing fingers, because I don't even have enough knowledge to point fingers.
Yeah, same, me neither.
First thing was politics that is on my mind, or that in my brain, in my consciousness, in my thinking, my first impression on politics, this could be part because of House of Cards and my liking towards House of Cards, but I think politics is a lot about appearance, and I think there should be a lot of evidence over history, contemporary times, that politics is primarily how you appear to be instead of what you really are. With that said, I certainly see what you're saying, and that is certainly valid. But in my mind, what's also just to supplement your point or supplement your thinking, I think politics, with I guess some very prominent examples, it seems to be a method for some well achieved or materialistically abundant people or family to go the next level. If you look at, I think, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, after you get abundant resources, abundant material stuff, you go to legacy, or you go to spiritual stuff, intangible impacts that you make on people, that you make on history. I think politics is a tool for now. It's not everyone, certainly not everyone gets into politics for that reason, but I think a lot of or a good number of people, family that are already resourceful, abundant materialistically, use politics as a method to leave legacy, to cement themselves in the history books.
Also, another question that I kind of had was like, okay, like your answer is responsibility gives life meaning, right? Do you also think that responsibility kind of gives life like a value? Like, what's like meaning versus value? You
It's
know?
not a question
Oh,
that I can
yeah.
answer off the top of my mind, but I'm willing to have a conversation. Responsibility, sorry, meaning and value. What do you think is the distinction between the two?
If I'm being like completely honest, I feel like there's not really a big distinction between meaning and value because what gives life like meaning is what is like valuable to one person's life. Like let me give an example. I can't talk facts all day, but for example, say that I climbed Mount Everest. Maybe that's not a really good example. Just stay with me. Say that I climbed Mount Everest. I would say that like my life is kind of complete. Like if that's my goal, like goal in my life is just to climb Mount Everest. And after I climbed it, I'm like, okay, like my life is complete. Like if I die the next day, I'll die happy. That's something that's valuable to me. Like I feel like that's something like this thing that I want to overcome is something that is valuable to me. So that's why it gives my life meaning. Or there's this TikTok that I saw the other day of, do you know Keshi? Is that how you say his name? Keshi, the singer?
You mean her? Yes.
Her? Who's her?
Like
Keshi. I need to pull up a photo. Huh. Hold
TikTok?
on.
Is that the song?
No. Hold on.
No idea.
You don't know who Keshi is?
Okay.
Keshi. Do you listen to songs?
Show me. I don't recognize that. What's her favorite
Wait, let
song?
me show
What's
you.
her like famous song?
Let me show you his songs. It's like Limbo.
Nope, no idea
Oh
who that
my
is.
gosh, you're missing out. You're missing out on life. It's
My musical taste is quite eccentric.
okay, we have to talk about your musical taste later because I love to know what you listen to. But anyways, so Keshi is like this Asian American singer-songwriter. He's really famous. Let me search up how famous he is. I think he's like top five on Spotify last
Oh,
year.
I was thinking about Keisha.
Who's Keisha? Okay,
Yeah.
anyways. So I think his story is very like inspiring. I think like his journey in life is really inspiring, and I think he loved like he's that type of artist that loves like what he does. Because I know there's some artists or like songwriters that hate like writing songs, and we'll not get into that. But basically, in a TikTok interview, I know my source is not very reliable, but it's like a basically an interview with him, and then he talked about how he thinks that his life is complete because what he does and like what he have done in life is like very valuable in the music industry. Like he said, he created songs that people love to listen to, and he gets enjoyment from other people's enjoyment. So that's why I was like wondering about like he said his like the like his life is complete, and oh my gosh, I forgot where I was getting with this. So like the way that I look at it is just like meaning and value doesn't have a significant difference. Like I think they are the same thing. Like they are treated like the same thing when people talk about how they're happy or they feel fulfilled. They use these two terms like interchangeably, in my opinion.
I certainly think it's very similar, but from what you said, I think what I think the difference, if there's a tiny difference between, is that value seems to be, because of the word, the way that the word is used, I guess, commonly in our lives, I feel like value of someone's life may be a little more, I guess, first of all, objective, but also, as you said, value could be climb Mount Everest, or that big achievement, that big legacy, or that positive impact that you left. While meaning doesn't have to be, meaning could be negative, although we don't usually talk about negative meaning. Meaning could be neutral. It could be, just trying to survive. I think meaning is more, seems more every day. Seems like, meaning is what keeps you going, but value is what is kind of like that point where, after you surpassed it, you're like, okay, this is what I expect in my life to go. I'm very happy that my life did get here. That seems to be the case. But you mentioned something interesting about Everest. And a few
It
weeks
was
ago,
just on the top of my head.
a few weeks ago, because that is one of the stuff that one of the points or ideas that did stun this stun responsibility a little bit. It seemed to not, fall in line. Because I don't know, months ago, I had like a not an existential crisis. I never go into an existential crisis because there's a bunch of responsibilities. I have a AP stats test tomorrow. I can't go into an existential crisis. No, I don't. I'm just kidding. That's just an example. Like, I have a test tomorrow. I have stuff I need to do. I have my organization, blah, blah, blah. Like, I can't go into existential crisis every day. But I kind of had like a slump or where I thought about stuff. And that night or that day, I was looking at people. I was looking at mountaineering or people who climb mountains. And specifically, I was looking at there's this documentary, I believe, called The Alpinist. And this is like there's a Canadian guy, this Canadian guy who does free solo on glaciers. So doesn't like basically no ropes, no protection, anything. Just like ice pick and some gear, and he goes climbing a glacier that's like vertical. So
Oh.
he died ultimately, where we think he's dead, because he tried to climb one really tall one in South America, but there was an avalanche or stuff like that. But it's almost like he knew he was gonna die, and that was, Joe Rogan talks about him, and he says the first thing he knew. From the like 10 minutes into the documentary, this guy is gonna die because the stuff he does is so crazy. But dad saw it, and also my dad, he has a strong influence on me. One of the things that he definitely talked about a lot, sparsely through my upbringing, was his experience where he got to climb him Mount Everest, but he didn't go to the top because. Going to the top, he did it like a decade ago at the very least, so it's definitely not today's technology. But still, today, I think going to the top is dangerous, takes skill of that. He got to go to climb Everest, he got to visit Antarctica, both he said are life-changing or perspective eye-opening experiences. And some of those things were especially these extreme stuff. Like climbing Everest, like, and then climbing Everest now is like maybe a little less dangerous, but free soloing on ice is just you're asking to die. You're saying, okay, I'm just gonna roll a dice every day. And that was one thing that kind of stunned or was like, okay, that doesn't quite make sense why people would do that. So I didn't, I didn't get to an answer, but I guess the only thing I would say is that just from a my own perspective, I'm someone who would want to do those things, or those things interest me for some reason. I guess there's something interesting, I guess, as we get to it, is that my take on fear, because fear is also, I guess, a big thing in philosophy. I guess first a little bit of context and some references. I guess I got into fear not recently. I think my introduction to it could be Carl Jung and his work on The Shadow, which was something that I explored at least 2 years ago to start. And from then on, there's quite some things that impacted, or there's definitely a lot of stuff that impacted the way I look at fear, but a few significant ones include, I don't particularly enjoy horror movies, just as a side note.
What? That's crazy. You're crazy. Oh my gosh. Who doesn't love a good horror movie?
We can talk about it. But
Okay,
there
but
was one
continue.
thing.
Sorry.
There was
That's
one.
just
No worries.
really.
No worries. Because that's, I guess, definitely an interesting topic. But one movie that definitely shaped, or a trilogy that definitely shaped the way I look at fear, is Nolan's The Dark Knight series, or the Dark Knight trilogy. Wonderful series. I really loved it. I watched a lot of it on in my flights to China and back, because those are long flights. And Nolan in that movie, especially the last one where Batman, or Bruce Wayne, he's dumped, or he's in this prison, this famous prison. It's structured, it's very old, it's ancient, it's not very advanced. It's like a well, and the prison that is at the bottom of the well, and like around the well, you have like these stone walls. So if you want to get out, you would f free solo and climb up the well, and you're free to get out. And they talk about a lot of Nolan's very philosophical in all of his movies. He's very philosophical, and they talk about a lot of things. They talk about how the prison is really dangerous, or really torturing, because that sunlight coming in from the well is kind of like, it's definitely hope. That represents hope. But at the same time, there is fear. There is fear of dying from falling down from while you're climbing and all of that. And in that, in there's a very, I guess, one of the key scenes of that movie, or potentially the climax, is when Bruce Wayne talks to one of the elders, which is stereotypical, talks to a wise elder, and the wise elder says,
The stage, isn't that like a
yeah, they so Bruce they he talks to Bruce, he says, do you fear death, or like, do you have fears? I guess it's really asking him, what do you fear, or do you have fears? And Bruce says, I don't fear anything. But his real answer is like, I don't fear anything except for watching my city burn as I rot here, which
wow,
is a
you
redundant
remember
answer.
that?
Yeah.
That's a really okay.
I remember
Good
like
memory.
classic movie lines. Yes.
Yeah.
But the elder says, there's no shame in fearing death, because it's nature's most powerful motivator. And that was definitely interesting, because before then, we're coming into that, I felt personally, I felt an urge, or a motivator, or kind of like a drive to remove fear, to like not have any significant fear, including the fear of death. But learning that was interesting, because basically that scene conveys, or tries to say, that there's no, you should fear death, because that motivates you, instead of like not fearing death. And that was definitely, that also definitely goes into the guy free soloing on ice. There's something there, very complicated, or complicated to me, because I'm not able to articulate it very well. But that's my take on fear. But still, every day, or today, for me, I don't. I it, do if I recognize that I have a fear of something, I will try so hard to remove it. I won't run away from it and say, I will not admit, or not like, I will deliberately try to remove that fear. There's something there. But yeah, that was a long and unclear spiel on fear.
I understood. I think I understood what you were trying to say. But I feel like my take on fear is just like I don't think I'm scared of a lot of things. Like I love horror movies, but when I was doing the media course, when I was taking the media course last year, we talked about why people, like the general population, like humans are kind of more attract, like fear draws them in. So I think your perspective is really unique. Like you try, when you're scared of something, like you don't run away from it. Like you like kind of you what did you say? You like try to avoid it? Or like no. You
No,
try to
no,
take
I.
it out. You try to eliminate it.
Yes. So I'll give you an example. Like, say it's dark at night. I wake up and I want to go to something, and then there's a noise coming from the closet. I would fear it for 1 second, and as soon as I registered that thought, I would say, "No, you don't fear anything. Go, like see what's happening in there." So that's kind of like the mind process.
What? And you don't like horror movies. So what's your reasoning for not liking horror movies?
I don't know. I don't like movies overall,
You don't like movies overall. Okay.
because I guess my usual reasoning. Now this may be skewed. There's a lot of what do you call it? What's that word for logical fa a lot of logical fallacies might have affected the way I articulate this reason, because I've had to talk to my parents a lot of times over upbringing to argue with them or to say why I don't want to go to movies. My usual argument is that they are sensationalized and they're not really an effective use of time, or they're kind of waste of time, in my opinion. A lot of most movies, now I particularly adore Nolan movies, for their philosophical depths and their greatness, I guess. I really, but what was I saying? Yeah, so
You
oh,
don't like movies? Do you think it's a waste of
there was
time?
something connected. So I'm gonna try to connect the circle, because I think there is a connection. So first of all, I don't know the order that I should do things, but first of all is horror movies, because there was an interesting we were looking at for English class this year. We read an article that I remember we read like 2 or 3 weeks ago, a Stephen King article. Stephen King essay about why people like horror movies. And he argued that we're all mentally insane to some degree. It's just that most of us hide it really well, and some of us don't hide it really well. It's another way to put it. And he says there's a need for us, for humans, to have catharsis, which is kind of like a release of emotions once a while, which I find there's definitely some evidence to that. But the way I connect this to a lot of the stuff, or to the meaning of life, is that my first answer to the I think my first formal answer to the meaning of life is nihilism. So when I was in grade 8, there was like a speech competition at Crescent, and I gave a speech on nihilism, or nihilism, what they say it in different ways. And nihilism is the argument that there is no meaning in life. I think essentially, I don't want to, I don't, I'm not particularly versed on this very, very, very well, but nihilism is, I think there was a famous example, like they said that the optimist sees the glass is half full, the pessimist sees that the glass is half empty, and the nihilist, I don't know, was it that he sees nothing at all or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, he's been,
Yeah,
yeah.
so I gave a speech on nihilism. That was my first answer to life. But it's not very effective when you're in
Huh.
school to think the life is has no meaning. But I was reading actually yesterday night, or no, 2 days ago, we were out eating, and my brother brought this little book, very tiny book about big ideas in philosophy. And I was just scrolling through, and I flipped to some interesting topics that I wanted to see what they talked about. And one chapter of it was on nihilism and had some Nietzsche, but not a lot of Nietzsche in it. But what it also mentioned was the Joker and what the Joker's philosophy is. So the Joker is definitely a nihilist, or at least the book argued that the Joker was a nihilist. And the core of the Joker's philosophical thinking, or a philosophical principle, is that madness is like gravity. And this is his line: madness is like gravity. All you need is a little push. And that definitely intrigued me. I didn't give it too much thought because it's not particularly connected to my life, but that was an interesting idea. That chaos is like gravity, where we, tend towards chaos, and madness in human is like that. It's interesting. I didn't give it too much of a formal, complicated thought, but interested me. What were we talking about? Just left off.
Responsibility gives life meaning. That's what we were talking
Yes.
about. Okay, last question based on this topic. I don't think we're gonna get through all five questions, but that's okay. I like this style of conversation more. But wait, before I ask the next question, when you were talking, I know you said that you think like movies are kind of like a waste of time if you don't get anything from out of watching a movie, like if you don't learn something. But I think you're gonna really enjoy two horror movies because they were like very philosophical. Like I enjoyed watching them because there's a lot of like symbolism. And I was talking about these two movies with my philosophy teacher. Oh, I love him, great guy. But we were talking about it and we realized how many like hidden gems there were, but you just have to like watch carefully. I watched these two for like three times already, and I still didn't find all of them. But the first one, I don't know if you've heard about it, is Hereditary. Have you heard about it?
Nope, I'll note it down.
It's so good. It's so good. I'll give you a little overview without any spoilers. So basically, it's about this family of four. So there's the parents, and then there's the older brother and the younger sister. And the younger sister seems to have some type of like mental disability. And she's very like quiet. She keeps to herself. And then the older brother is just like any normal high schooler, goes out to parties every single weekend, blah blah blah. But since the start of the movie, oh, the start of the movie, the trigger point, I like to call it the trigger point where like everything happens, starts to happen, is the grandma of the family passes away from an illness, and the mother didn't have a really good relationship with the grandmother. But you can tell that the mom had some sort of like deep dark secret she's trying to hide. But then as the movie progresses, it gets more religious and culty as it goes. Like the beginning was very, very ordinary. Like it's the start of any horror movie. Like a family lives here and then the grandma dies. But then it progresses to like very religious. And I think I really enjoy religious, like philosophical movies, because I always learn a lot from them, and I think it's like it gives insight to human nature. I know it's kind of broad. The next one is Midsommar. Have you heard of that?
Nope.
Oh my goodness, Danny, you're missing out on so much stuff. Midsommar, but it's Sommer, like summer.
Yes, I see.
This is also a really good for like a symbolic movie, I guess. But the thing that I really liked about this movie is that the characters, or like the characters in the movie, they were all high when the whole entire movie takes place. So it's like it kind of, in my opinion, it kind of deduces everyone to like equal. But it's also like very culty. It's like known to be culty. But yeah, very good. A lot of hidden symbols. Check those two out. Okay, now on to my last question about your big answer. I was just kind of wondering about like what happens when that responsibility is like overwhelming. Like what happens when that responsibility like consumes you? Is that counterproductive to what people are trying to achieve?
Yeah, that's definitely a good question, relevant one for sure. The first thing I'll say is that most people don't look at responsibility in this sense. I don't think mo I think most people, again, from based on social norms, seems like most people try to evade it, right? Seems like most people look at it from a negative point of view. Oh no, I have to send my kid to school. I have to do a There's something interesting, I feel like. If you break it down into the really small details, It seems annoying, it seems like labor, but putting it all together, raising this child, doing meaningful work that contributes to society, to the progress of society, there is suddenly meaning. There's suddenly something great about it. So I think the perspective that people look at it is definitely a big part to the way it impacts you. Is it ever counterproductive when you have too much responsibility? I can't answer from a really philosophical point of view. I
It's fine.
can't.
We don't have to continue the philosophical talk.
Something that came up to mind, just I mentioned it as we have limited time, is there's two topics that one I thought about when I thought about, what we could talk about, one that I thought about, and the other one I feel may be of interest to you. The first one is determinism. Is everything in our lives already determined, or is like I guess that's one way to put it. There are different ways to put it, and they all differ by a little bit. And then the second topic is on religion, especially I guess Buddhism. So I guess let's talk about religion first, as we just came off of it, and we could talk about maybe determinism a little bit. So I guess I can start. My household isn't. So the thing with Buddhism is that if you're not a monk, if you're not particularly superstitious about it, you're not gonna. It's not too integrated into your life. Like the first of all, I have again limited knowledge about other religions. I have limited knowledge about Buddhism even. But my dad, who was a fervent, is that the correct word? I don't know. We'll fact
Sorry,
check
say
with.
that again. Say that again.
Fervent, is that a word?
What's fervent?
That's it. Yes, it is a word.
Passionate? Okay.
So he was a
Great,
fervent
great vocabulary. Oh my gosh.
follower of a particular branch of Buddhism. So there are different branches of Buddhism in China. There's one that came from Japan, they call it like Southern Buddhism. There's one that came from Tibet, or
India?
I call it Tibet. It's not Tibet, is it? It's
Taipei. What?
no, Tibet. What is that? How do you say that?
Taipei.
No, it's in Chinese, it's Xizang.
Oh, yes, Tibet. I think that's,
Is it Tibet? It sounds like Tibet to me, and that sounds very wrong.
Tibet? Tibet. I think it's Tibet, yeah.
Yeah, so he was particularly fascinated with that branch. And that branch is known for a lot of different things. For one, it's known for that big temple, big palace in Tibet. But for the other, it's also known for people who are really, really what's the word? It's escaping my mind, who are really how do you describe someone who is really, really religious and faithful? There's a word, I don't know.
There's a word for that? I don't.
Yeah, I think. So it's
Anyways,
also known for people who are really faithful, because what they would do is the leader of their religion, of that branch of Buddhism. Oh no, hold on. I might be mixing stuff up, because there are two religions in that area, but
Oh, okay.
one of them is known, maybe it's not Buddhism, but one of them is known as one the leader, or basically like a messiah, when he appears, people would go from their home and they would crawl on all of their arms. They call it like a certain name. I don't know what it is in English, but they would basically walk one step, and then they would kneel on their knees, and then do this, and then they would go all the way to the palace from their home. So they're also known for that. Extremely faithful. But yeah, Buddhism. The way my dad and we and he explained to me, and we were talking about it, is that it's not similar to the two other really big religions in Christianity and what's the other one? It's blanking. The Quran. What's the Quran? What is religion of the Quran? It's escaping my mind.
I know it. Hold on. I don't know what I'm searching it up.
It
Oh,
is
Islam? Islam true.
Islam. Yeah, yes.
Islamic? Yeah.
Yes. It's different because it doesn't have a Messiah, or it's not, it's Messiah where it's, big guy is not similar to the Messiah in the other two religions. Because okay, I don't have the names of all these people. Who is the biggest god? Okay, it's not even a god. Who is the biggest Buddha in oh, maybe his name is just Buddha because he has a name in Chinese.
Wait, are you sure it's a he? I thought it was a she.
I don't know. I
Oh,
think it's a he. I think it's a he. He was a prince.
really?
Who is the Buddha?
Like a deity? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah,
Yes.
I know who you're.
Siddhartha Gautama. I may get grilled if I pronounce it really oddly. Yeah, so he was. Okay, why are they saying he's a T? Oh, this is Indian Buddhism. Holy cow, there's too many.
I think the one you're talking about is like,
Maybe that is the one I'm talking about. There's just different stories of him.
are you sure it's not the girl? Because it's not Guanyin.
No. He's not the biggest guy. The biggest guy is Shijiamoni. He's the founder.
Oh. Oh.
Right. But yeah, so he was a prince. He was immortal. And that's an interesting thing. We were talking about it. We talked about it a little bit. All of these people that you go into the temple and you worship, quote unquote, but you're not really worshiping them. Well, you are. Some people are. There's certainly some people are. But these people are all mortal at one point. They were all real people. That's a big difference, I think. And yeah, so Buddhism, I think, looks inward a lot instead of looking around, looking outwards, which I think from my limited knowledge of Christianity definitely does. And then here's the part where it gets controversial a little bit, is that I was exposed, like last year or some stuff like that, to Nietzsche's ideas. And one of Nietzsche's most famous ideas that God is dead and we have killed him. That's very easy to sensationalize topic, but it's deep, it's in depth. He has a whole argument about why Christianity is actually harmful to society. There's a lot of argument where there's a lot of interesting points. I can't say I embrace it completely because I don't. I lack the ability to critically critique or to critically, think through all of his points. But there's definitely some things seem valid, and definitely seem like there are elements. Oh, and this was something interesting. Definitely, this is one of the topics I've thought about for sure, is how religion usually has a purpose of controlling people. And that's not really the case with Buddhism. Buddhism never really wanted to get associated with power. It never really did. But what's interesting in Chinese history is that there are still three to four instances where the emperor or the ruling people wanted to actually cleanse Buddhism and to get rid of them. But if you look at Confucianism, if you look at Christianity, if you look at the religions that are affiliated with the ruling people, where the ruling class promoted it, usually they have elements of it that controls the population, because that's the purpose of government, that's the purpose of religion, is to control people. To If you can control the people's think, you control the people essentially. And that goes against my, I don't know, my basic principle of not following what other people do. And a big part of it is to not, I guess, think the same thing or have the same opinion as everyone else. Yeah. Well, what I mean, I yak so much, or I talk so much. What do you think about religion and this stuff?
I think we're like personally speaking, like religion kind of plays a big role in my life. I feel like I'm someone who doesn't believe in any like particular God or religion. But like growing up in such like a religious household in a way, because when I was younger, like when I was in China, we had like statues of like different gods from Buddhism like in our home. And then I had to, we're not super, I wouldn't say we're super, super religious, but have to like go to the Sunday morning market and get like fruits and like alcohol. Actually, my parents bought those, but I have to like pour the alcohol into the little cups in front of the gods statues. It's like really small. It's quite small. It's like this.
Yeah, we also had it.
Yeah, but we had to like worship it. It's, I don't know if you know it, but we had Guanyin and then Guangong. Do you know Guangong?
Oh,
Like the red face one?
yes.
Yeah. But like just growing up when I had to worship them every Sunday, like every weekend, I had to peel oranges for them. Like it's like I was forced, kind of forced to have this belief. And like whenever I do something that's like un not like that that's like wrong, kind of like if I lied to my parents about if I did my homework or not, I always have that thought in the back of my mind, like, oh, like I can't be doing this. Like this is very like not good, like I'm not being a good child or something like that. But I think religion, like speaking on religion as a whole, I think religion really shapes our actions in life, even if we don't think about it, like, or
Yes.
like maybe it's just me, but I always tend to like reflect, do things, reflect on things or like think about things before I do them. Like I just have the thought in the back of my mind. And I don't know if you know, do you know the Cham Shan Temple in Toronto? I don't know if you know.
Oh, yes, this is.
So my parents and I go there like every weekend, and whenever I go there, I leave with like a more, being a more relaxed self, but I still don't know if it's just like
It's a placebo
how,
effect.
yeah, I don't know if it's just a placebo effect or like I genuinely believe in it, because I think it's a really complicated thing. Like belief is a really complicated thing. Like,
Yes.
oh my gosh, you know that thing where like, oh, I don't want to talk about this too much because I don't want to get too religious, but a lot of people have beliefs, but that belief can be really like become really obsessive. I'm not gonna name names, but like yeah, like I think obsessive religious beliefs isn't healthy for people. But I
Sure.
guess like when I talk about it with my parents, like it's good to have that thought in the back of your mind. Excuse my dog. Okay.
Do you
Yeah.
have a
That's
do you have another particular question that you're very interested in? Because I want to give, or I want to have a, I would love to speak a few sentences about determinism, but I
sure,
want to
sure.
give the stage to you first.
No, I don't have any more
Okay.
questions. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so what I was thinking about when I was like 10 minutes, 20 minutes before the podcast, just thinking about what we may talk about. I didn't want to lack content and then just talk about, I don't know, brain rot and everyday life stuff. Is one thing that I was thinking about is determinism. Now, there's a few things. One thing I'll leave to you, a question I'll leave to you to think about. I'm sure you'll think about it at various points in your life. Is everything in your life determined? And from watching a few YouTube videos, it seems pretty hard to argue against that everything in your life was determined. And building on that, I asked myself and I asked some other people the question of if you had a really, really advanced algorithm that takes into account every single thing, every single variable that happens on Earth. Can you calculate what your future is going to look like? And the answer seems like yes, right? If you can take into account every single thing, because ultimately the decisions we make are chemical. You know that from AP Psych. We make them because our brain thinks that way, or our brain does this. Now, there are stuff that we think are random. but can a computer maybe does that? Like, probably it has the ability to calculate our life to a pretty high accuracy, counting for maybe some mutations and stuff. And that was something that interested me from definitely. Like, what they didn't concern me too much because I guess if you think that stuff is determined, then I was determined to have this thought about determinism at this point.
Yes.
Or I was determined to have this conversation with you today about determinism at this very moment. But what interested me and why I want to give this talk here was that it seems very clear to me, and it still seems very clear to me that we were not meant to have this conversation if I didn't reach out. I was not meant to. There's a very significant example, I think. Well, I don't, I'm not, I'm not, I might not articulate it in the clearest way possible, but I think there's a very important step in everyone's lives. But unfortunately, some people may not ever do to have that step. But I think there's a very important step for massively successful and massively innovative people in their lives when they do something that when they reflect on it in retrospect, they look at it and they say, this didn't have to happen, but I made that thing happen. There's some examples in my life. There's a certain person that I work with a lot, Andrew Gagnano. Now I'll shout out AAG in this podcast. Sister is Victoria, which I don't know too much about, but Andrew is a grade lower than me. So by all accounts, we shouldn't have met when we have met because the reason we met was he was looking at Forex, foreign exchange, one day in the library, and I came across. And we talk about it sometimes, that what if that day he wasn't trading foreign exchange by himself in the library? Instead, he was playing with his friend or doing whatever his friend was doing. What if we never met? But it seems like it's important and it's inspiring almost to have something happen or to have something happen, even if when you really think about it, you think that it's destined, it was meant to be. But just the slimmer of just the that slim thought of this happened because I was excellent, because I was, unique. I was really above average. Now, I don't want to sound elitist or did I pronounce it right? Elite. I don't want to sound
Elitist.
like I discriminate people who I don't know. I discriminate people who are not elite, but I think for people who want to climb the ladder, who want to, make something exceptional of themselves, it's a big stepping point or it's a big milestone when you accomplish that thing that you weren't meant to do on your roadmap. Because the other thing that I think goes into this is the fact that a lot of, I'm sure you have this observation in your life, a lot of your peers may seem like their life was laid out where they don't have a lot of autonomy in what they do every day. It seems like, everything in their life is kind of like determined. They go to school every day, go to do tests, do everything, and then go into a university, however good or bad, but it seems like it was laid out, like it was meant to be, and they understand that. They just do it and they think that there's nothing really unique about it. I think there's a big difference when you compare that kind of people to a person who has done something that they were not supposed to do, that it was not meant to happen. I don't know, maybe that's a mental thing, that's like a wrong thought maybe, but it seems to have a really powerful effect when you really make that connection, really accomplish something that you are not meant, where that seems to not be on the, direction or on the path that you were going down. I think there's something about going down the path that your parents have laid out for you, specifically with, I guess, Asian people, is that seems like there's a clear path that your parents lay out for you.
Yeah, I feel like I really like this idea about like chance, like things that happen may never meant to be happening, but like I really like this idea. And for my philosophy paper in grade 10, I was gonna like write about that. But I think the most important thing, or like the thing that you said that really resonated with me, is individual autonomy, because this kind of connects to your to what we were talking about before, like the opportunities. Like I think you talked about how success, or like student success in today's time, like in today's society, is doing the unconventional thing. It's going off route, not following like the crowd, what everyone else is doing. And I think this goes like the idea of taking a chance and autonomy goes back to that idea, because at the end of the day, you're your own person and you choose to make things happen. So it's better to take a chance on things that are unconventional instead of going the conventional way that like I guess like Asian parents or like any parents in general like lay out for you. I think it's really important for people or like students to have that autonomy and that like idea to think differently about what they want to do in the future. Like it's just like your life is your own, so why not like make it very unique for yourself in a way. Do you have any other ideas you want to share?
No, I think well, but just I guess wrapping it up a little bit. Last year, towards the end, I'm really fortunate that there was this wonderful teacher who has taught me English for the last for grade 9 and 10. Her name is Mr. Top. He's a wonderful teacher, and he really likes to evoke to talk about these philosophical discussions. And we talk. Oh well, I didn't. Well, we didn't talk about meritocracy, but that's a very academic, that's a very, technical, that's a very technical discussion. So I guess it's somewhat good that we didn't talk about meritocracy, but it's also a topic that I had extensive discussion with him about. But I think end of last year, after 2 years of this discussion about so many different topics, I was like, I'm tired. Where it's tiring. It seems like chasing your own tail. That was a example where that was the analogy we gave. It seems like philosophy is continuously chasing your own tail in a circle, and you'll never get to it. Which seems true from my experience. It's just like a question spawns more question. I guess my question to you is, after talking with me, we're talking philosophy for so long, what do you think your meaning of life is? Because I asked you that day, what do you think?
I think, unfortunately, I still don't really have a definitive answer, because I think to really answer what the meaning of life is, I have to, I guess, spend more time reflecting, like self-reflecting, like you did, like thinking about this question. And I don't think I can really ha like provide, give you an answer, like a definitive answer. But I guess answering on a very shallow level, because I don't know how to answer in a deeper level for now. I really want to be able to make an impact in the world. Like I really want to leave like my own footprint in the world in some way, shape, or form. But I think I might have talked to you about this. I don't really remember. But when I was doing SAT practice test, I think I've talked to you about this, but anyways, there was this reading question that was talking about like materializing our opinions and thoughts, and just like ma in order to make something valuable, we have to materialize it. And a lot of writers actually find it really challenging to do that, because one person might have very insightful opinions, very strong opinions that can change lives, but they don't have any way, shape, or form to like materialize it, to like to put it, I guess, like write it down or put it out into the world
Yes.
because there are some thoughts that we can't explain. It's just a feeling. So I really want to be able to, I don't know. I don't know. I want to be able to live a life where I can provide people with my most insightful thoughts. Like I want to be able to put my thoughts onto like a page or like onto text. But yeah, that's like my long, like my biggest goal in life, I think.
I mean, we can talk about the other topic I brought up in the three topics was discipline. What's your take on discipline?
You go first.
It's a quality I value most. If you like ask me what quality do I value most, I would say discipline. I'm a big, I guess, proponent from what I know about stoicism, about one sentence stoics. Are you familiar with stoicism? Okay. Well,
Don't think so.
one sentence explanation is Stoicism is about you cannot control what happens to you in life. Is that there was a very good way of putting it, but I think this is fine. You cannot control what happens to you in life, but what you can control, and the only thing you can control really, is the way you react to what happened to you in life. That's Stoicism. It's similar to Buddhism. It's similar in some ways. And, I think when I was talking to my dad, we were saying, it's not about having no. Okay, well, here's an interesting topic. And I think you'll provide a very interesting perspective on this, is that there's definitely a phenomenon in males or young men or, guys my age and older. Where they seem cold, they seem emotionless. This is a very, very interesting phenomenon, in my opinion. It's a sad one, interesting one, it's a very deeply sociological one. But I definitely had that phase too. And I think it's very recent that I realized that smiling is kind of like discipline. It's disciplining yourself to smile is somewhat valuable. But I think there are many reasons, and I definitely reflected on it myself, is that I think to start with, we don't associate discipline with smiling. It seems like when you imagine discipline, it's not a smile. It's a like this, like no emotion. But I don't know about girls, young women, but young men definitely have this very commonplace, very widespread phenomenon of this. They call it like cold and distant people, where they seem emotionless, they seem like they don't need social interaction, they seem like they don't need care, they don't need attention, they're very disciplined. It's definitely a phenomenon. Yeah, there's a very strong male, I guess I saw there was definitely a wave or a very significant social phenomenon of young men or men of many of overall young, not old men, who really, really value discipline, who really, really. What's your take on that?
I actually did not know like about that perspective at all. Like I didn't think that was a thing, to be honest. When I think of discipline, let me just search up discipline to just. Yeah, when I think of discipline, I don't think of any of that. Like I think of like regulations, like rules, like law-abiding rules, following. I guess like that could kind of relate to your point about like following social norms or like conforming to the idea that society places or like the role that society places on like an individual, I guess.
That's really
But
interesting because I think the male discipline is not conforming to social norms, because social norms make sense, because social norms tend towards comfort, towards giving in to your temptations, towards scrolling on TikTok all day. I think the male discipline is really about not conforming to that. Is about, and it relates to a plethora of topics, including like rebellion in this age, or kind of a lot of things, a lot of things. But yeah, do you have any experience or talk within like however goal about guys who like look cold, look stone cold? They had like just have this emotionless expression all day.
I think the term that the internet places on these people are like mysterious.
Yes, for sure.
I think this cult, like this new social media culture of like mysterious, like demure, mysterious, is very funny to me because I think, like, yes, like being mysterious can inflict more like curiosity towards like you as a person, but like it doesn't really like you're like if you're trying to be mysterious, you're just like you're nothing more than just like everyone else. Like it doesn't really give you personality. You're very like one dimensional. Like you don't have any complexity to your identity, and I just think that like those type of people are really boring. Like you're trying so hard to conform to a certain way, but in reality, you're just, I don't know, you're just nothing at all. Like, you're not contributing anything. I don't know. That's just my.
I guess there's a last thing, and you can sensationalize your podcast or your ep this episode is this was one this is definitely a very relevant topic. I think a lot of Crescent guys would definitely want to know this. What do you think is the best way of getting to know in because in our little sorry, one sec. Talking to my mom. Very
It's
okay.
okay, it's okay.
Yep. Yeah, so back to what I was saying. A lot of Crescent guys would love to know because in our kind of little circle right now, it's kind of like divided where, there's boys, there's girls, and they're not connected really. What would you say is the best way for guys or say guys like me or guys in my grade to get to know people in Havergal? Or do you think it's valuable? Do you think it's valuable one way or the other? And if it's valuable, what would you say is the best way or the best channel, the me best method, the best event to do so?
Okay, so I think that experience, like getting to know girls from different schools, or I guess just getting to know like the opposite gender is like a very valuable thing in I don't know, just like people's overall development process. I think it's unhealthy if you restrict yourself to social events because I don't know, you're trying to be mysterious or you think that those events are not for you. I think it's important to be open to changes. It's open to new experiences. And I think the best, I guess, way to do it or like outlet to do it is through the cost of school events. I think that's like a lot of people think, yeah, like nobody goes to that. But I think those events are the best ways to meet new people. And like you never know, you just might find someone who's like has the same exact interest as you. Like that's a good
Well, I think
start.
we can end on this interesting question. It's very that is still relevant to us. It's not going to be relevant to you next year probably, but it's going to be relevant to me. And it's something that I thought about when I thought about impact or making a change is that I have a particular disdain for cost of school events. I've been to only a few, but the thing was like these events and any events where it's like mass scale and you're reduced to just one gear of that night or one gear in a big cog in a big machine, it takes away something. It takes away individuality, in my opinion. And right, I think, and also I think with big events, you put on a mask. Everyone puts on a mask of themselves. and they reveal the version of themselves that they wish to reveal, but not really the true version of themselves and what they think.
Like, I guess my question is then, like, there's no way of knowing who's underneath that mask if you don't take the chance to know who's in the mask, who
Yeah,
the
so
mask is trying to portray first.
there's a very valid argument that maybe this is the best we can do. Like, maybe there is no way to do it otherwise in a more larger scale, but it's definitely a question that intrigued me is there a better way to do these things? Is there a more effective way without having to go through that first stage where you have to peel off their mask, you have to like appear a certain way? I dislike that process of feeling the social pressure to appear a certain way.
Okay, like for me, I feel like there's no way for you to meet new people without putting on like a fake false persona first. Because like think about it, every time you go outside, like every time you go in public, you're trying to appear a certain way. Like, oh, I was talking about this in my AP seminar class last year. Like, you're not doing anything for yourself. Like at the end of the day, you're not really doing anything for yourself. You're not, like, I guess when I'm like, if I dress up to go somewhere, I guess part of it is like for myself, for my own enjoyment. I don't know. Like I look good. I'm happy that I look good. But I think that happiness that I get from dressing up isn't because I am like, I look good. It's because other people will think I look good as well. Like if you really think about it. We're not doing anything for ourselves. So in social events, every action we make is to appear like a certain way. Like even when you meet someone, say like you go on a date, you go on a first date, you're talking to the girl, right? The things that you're saying and the things that the girl's saying can't be all true. Like it's like maybe like 80% is like, I wouldn't say fabricated, but like it's like perfected. It's like the sprinkles on top. It's not 100% true. Like even with people that you know for a long time, you sometimes hide certain facts about yourself because you want to be interpreted like the way that they know you as. And I think everybody is doing that. So you can't really avoid it. By avoid this like phase where it's like nothing's like 100% accurate. You can never, I don't know, avoid that part of like interacting with others. But I think an advice that I can give is just you have to like talk to people like how you talk to like your best friend, like bestest friend. Like if you want to show the version of yourself that's like that really defines who you are. Just interact, make every interaction like the ones that you have with your closest, like, I don't know, closest friends or family. Because that way your interaction will become more natural and like there's more value out of it, you know?
Yeah, well, I have to go.
Yep.
Well, my last comment is, well, first of all, I thank you very much. I deeply appreciate this opportunity. But just commenting on the last part, I guess the same way I said about college maxing, about my dissent or my discontent towards college maxing and my disagreement or my dissent, is that the word? Towards that. Towards those actions, I feel like similarly, I don't want to play this comparison game that everyone else plays. Instead, I don't know exactly what other game I'm playing, but I guess maybe the name of the game is focusing on myself. But I deeply, I guess, dislike this model of playing the comparison game with other people. I think it will lead you astray. I think it will lead you to do things that are not what you wanted to do, but instead you thought you had to do to appear better. All right.
That's very inspirational. That's gonna resonate with me for a while. Well, thank you to the listeners for listening, and thank you, Danny, for today's episode. Like, I really enjoyed having conversations with you. I think, yeah, it's very insightful. I gain a lot from our conversation. So thank you so much. And yeah, hope you have fun at your golf simulator.
Thank you. All right. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Best of luck.